Welcome to Inspired Radio with Helen Taylor. Get ready to be inspired. Stories have power and conversations spark change. So let's create a new world and get started right now.
Okay. All right. Good afternoon, I should say. Good afternoon, Melbourne. Good afternoon, Australia. And good day or evening to all of our international listeners too. I'm Helen Taylor. Welcome to my show, Inspired Radio. I'm here with you every Monday, 3 p.m. Melbourne, Australia time, and Sunday, 11 p.m. Central time for US and Canada listeners. For conversations and stories to inspire you, this platform is brought to you by BBS Radio TV. So thank you very much, BBS and the brothers, Don and Doug, for making this possible. Before we get started, getting this show back up and running, I had some sponsors come out of nowhere, some friends and family who wanted to support me with getting this platform up and going. And the sponsor for today is my friend Lisa. Lisa has, for the last 3 years, had a lot of stuff going on in her life, but no matter what is going on for her, she's always got time for others. And she is our sponsor and helped me out for today. So thank you very much, Lisa. So Inspired Radio, just a little bit about what it's about. It's all about change and getting uncomfortable, shaking up the status quo a bit. My guests are here to tell their story and to reveal how they have overcome change and made better lives for themselves and, of course, for others, and to inspire you with their stories, of course. This show embodies the spirit of love, respect, and compassion. And with that in mind, let me introduce today's guest, being my first guest on this new platform. So I welcome the remarkable, and I mean that, Ian, Professor Ian Brighthope, a pioneer in nutritional and environmental medicine and a passionate advocate for preventative health. With decades of groundbreaking work, Ian has transformed how we understand food, supplements, natural therapies, our well-being, and our world. He's a medical doctor, an author, an educator, and founder of the Australasian College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine, and more recently, WOW, which is the World of Wellness International. His vision has inspired generations of health professionals to look beyond symptoms and treat the whole person. So join us as we explore his incredible journey, his wisdom, and the future of true health and vitality. Welcome, Ian.
Oh, thank you very much, Helen. It's always very nice to catch up with you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, so, it's good to be on BBS, not BBC.
Yes. Well, there's a poignant point there.
Thanks to the BBS boys. Very much appreciated. Something big and new.
But, they started this 20 years ago, this platform, 20-something years ago, because they really knew what was happening to freedom of speech even back then. So, yes, we thank them. Yeah. So, Ian, you and I got together only a few months ago. It was only like back in August this year. And I cannot believe how much has even changed in the information we shared then. We started talking about vaccines because I know that this is something you're pretty passionate about, aren't you?
Yes, I am very passionate about it. I saw the damage that vaccines was doing 50 years ago when I started in medicine. And I was shocked by the first experience when a baby was brought to me, a young infant was brought in, and suffering from febrile convulsions from a vaccine that had been given within the last 12 hours or so. And I sent the child off to the Royal Children's Hospital, and the doctors there came back to me and said this child had developed epilepsy. So that child would be on an anti-epileptic drug for the rest of its life. And to me, that was really a reaction to the vaccine. And after that, I kept my mind open and my ears and eyes open with regard to every mother that came in. And once you are known as a doctor who's empathetic to these sort of reactions, a lot more people come to see you. I mean, my practice wasn't basically pediatrics or vaccination reactions or general practice, but the difficulty of my practice was finding solutions to these vaccine-damaged babies. And when my children were born, they were not vaccinated at all. They've been the healthiest, the healthiest adults that you can imagine.
So that was back at the beginning of your journey that you experienced that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and that directed me away. It basically, I did 1 year of general medicine out there in the community. I could see what the doctors in the clinic were prescribing. They'd be prescribing the antibiotics that were most fashionable for that period of time for all the viral illnesses. And when we trained, we were taught you don't use antibiotics for viral infections because they're not active against viruses. Antibiotics are active against bacteria.
Yes.
And company reps were coming in saying that the pharmacies have got these in, and here is a paper to show that you won't get secondary bacterial infection if you prescribe this antibiotic for all the viral infections that you see. And I thought, this is not science. This is not the science I was taught. But the doctors were doing it. They were doing what the drug companies were telling them to. And that is in 1976, 70, 75, 76, when I witnessed these abnormal approaches to health care. Now we know that these antibiotics, the overuse of antibiotics, causes resistant bacteria, which are a major problem in hospitals, but also change the microbiome of the gut and the skin and every other part of the body, including the respiratory tract, the lungs, and the mouth and the airways.
Go
on, Helen, you can butt in any time you like.
But even I, as a lay person in my own research into health, I started reading and researching myself, and I knew that there was a big difference between bacteria and viruses. How does the medical system hoodwink doctors like that? Does that happen?
It's happened all my career.
Mm.
The industry is very, very powerful. The industry funds the professors at the university to do their research.
Mm-hmm.
When the histamine H2 blockers came out for gastric ulcers and peptic ulcers, there were three different types. Three different companies sponsored three different professors at one particular university here in Australia.
Right.
You've got the professors who teach the students and the doctors what to do and prescribe, and they are controlled or paid for by the drug companies. They will design trials that come out in favour of the drug. They will select patients from individuals from the beginning to show that the drugs may work, but more importantly, that they don't cause side effects. So you've got individuals who are being treated with drugs that are, in terms of their studies, biased in favour of the drug company selling more drugs.
It's how I look at most corporations out there. I look at them all like, well, at first I was calling them Ponzi schemes, but I really then turned that into MLMs. Anything that is like in business is like an MLM. You multi-level marketing. Somebody sits at the top and they start a company and they have a vision and an agenda. And then they start feeding that education or that vision to everybody down the line.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you say that the GP is the salesperson, the salesman
yes.
of the drug company.
Yes.
And the local expert is the super salesman.
Yes.
And the professor is the chief marketing arm of the company.
Absolutely.
Super salesmen.
Absolutely.
That's the way it works. And it's the corruption, a complete corruption of health by medicine. And the complete corruption of medicine by big pharma. Now, we do need some pharmaceuticals, but nowhere near what we're actually using and prescribing.
No, no. The scales have tipped far too far the wrong way, haven't they?
Well, they have. And the COVID vaccine was the ultimate in safety and efficacy. We were promised it was going to be safe. We were promised it was going to be effective. And we were promised it was going to just stay in the muscle of the arm and that it would not have an effect on our genes or genetics. Well,
and I know that at the time you came out vocally about that and wrote to many, many different people around this country. That's what we spoke about last time. But, as I said just earlier on, only a couple of months ago we spoke, you've now got access to, I've seen them through your Substack, and we'll let people know how to get access there at the end of the show. More and more articles and studies that are now coming out that are completely supporting anybody that was trying to get everyone to stop and think.
Yes, I mean, we were censored. The medical profession was heavily censored, and they're still trying to censor us around the world with these meetings that they're having. We were not allowed to talk about the adverse effects or the problems, potential problems with the vaccines. They were never shown to be safe. And in fact, before they were even released, emergency use authorization, they were shown to have 1,202 odd side effects, serious adverse reactions. So they were released knowing that they were going to cause illness. We didn't realize, some of us did feel that they were going to be serious adverse reactions, and serious to the point where we saw in 2021, 22, when the vaccines were released, a significant increase in unexplained, unexpected deaths.
Yes.
So, and I'm still people coming to me now, increasing numbers with illnesses. Guillain-Barré syndrome, neurological problems, immunological problems, autoimmune diseases. Helen, we're seeing things like turbo cancers that are unusual cancers, bizarre cancers, but presenting in stage 3 and 4 at a very late stage, and they are extremely aggressive cancers. And dealing with these is not easy when we are being exposed to an experimental vaccine that has a profound influence on the expression of our genes and probably inhibits our anti-cancer genes.
And it just breaks my heart, Ian, that that like the world has been turned upside down, hasn't it?
It has, and I believe that the vaccine manufacturers knew what they were doing. The people who are funding them know what they're doing. The World Health Organization knows what it's doing. They knew almost from the beginning that the COVID virus was a manufactured virus. It was manufactured in a laboratory in Wuhan, China. There's so much evidence for that now. You'd be crazy to deny that. That it was funded by the US, and the military were involved in the development of these weaponized or gain of function viruses. But they even knew what they were going to use to treat it. And this was even before the pandemic. Helen, this whole scenario of COVID and the vaccines was planned. It was part of the pandemic preparedness that they talk about in every country around the world.
And
So
now
we
there's substantial evidence to back all of that up, isn't there?
there is, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are some states in the US that are banning mRNA completely. There are research projects being conducted to show that the damage is being done by the spike protein produced by the vaccine, not the virus, and that these people who've been behind this, they do need to be held accountable. And I can mention people who funded it, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Mr. Gates has funded a lot of these vaccines, and in particular, contributed to COVID. Dr. Anthony Fauci, he knew what was going on. He was part of the development of the virus, sort
But a
of.
lot of these people keep themselves at arm's length, don't they, from all of
Yes,
this
yeah,
as well?
yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of the politicians are keeping them, and bureaucrats are keeping them at arm's length, and not publishing the information that should be published.
And themselves as well. I mean, don't get us talking about the Australian government, let alone the rest of them around the
Look,
world.
there are a lot of good people in there are a lot of good people in government, but there are
There
very
are.
few who are awake to really what's going on. There's a handful. There's less than 10 in the Australian Parliament who really know what's going on,
Well,
and
it's like anything, isn't it, Ian? It's like it's a big machine, just like any corporate is. I've watched, because we're both sort of, 60 plus and into those sort of, decades. So we've got a lot
you're being very kind, Helen. I'm in my eighth decade.
of. Are you? Oh my God, looking good. Nobody can see you, but I can vouch for it. But my point is, we've got decades of experience and and information knowledge. I can look back and see, like for the machine that's government, I've watched a number of people that I thought, oh, go you. You're going to change this. Somebody had a good heart and a good mind and, really good energy and intention get completely swallowed up by the machine and get spat out the other side.
That's right. The machine swallows you. If you want to stay in the machine, you've got to look at what's ahead of you, what's in front of you, and otherwise you'll lose everything in terms of your career. And
Yes.
that's what happens to people who rock the boat or speak out of tune, and that's ha that happens in politics as well. So they're very, very frightened to really speak up, but they do know what's going on. Many of them do, and they deny it. And denial is a very powerful defense mechanism for humans to avoid anxiety, to avoid depression, and to avoid the subject. Denial, denial, denial. It's everywhere. But we need to have the courage to speak to the truth, speak the power, because if we can't do that, there are no virtues left in life.
No, I agree with you there because I was thinking as you were talking about that is that people either get, spat out by the machine, absorbed by the machine, and they have to negotiate their actual conscious, their consciousness or their soul even. And that has side effects to do that as well. And I think all of it's contributed. This world, if you look outside at this world of ours, it is predominantly negative.
It's predominantly negative, and that is being created by those really, really very high up, what we call the elites, those who are above the extremely wealthy, like Gates and Co.,
The oligarchs.
the oligarchs, and the families that want to see control over everything, in particular control over the monetary systems. And this is where we have been made fearful of almost everything, whereas people around the world, the ordinary person like myself, yourself, I may be a little bit higher up in the social scales than a plumber or a carpenter but I hold them up in very high esteem. Laborers, we are all the middle or lower classes, and the upper classes maintain a certain level of well-being, but even above the upper classes, you've got the elites who control everything, and they can. I mean, they say that there are bankers' wars. Well, the wars are based on a lot of funding and finances, but wars are created for fear-mongering and creating issues for the entire global population.
Well,
So.
like the MLM marketing system I talked about, right? They're at the top of a game that they've created and they've got outcomes.
That's right.
Yep.
They want to make sure that no matter what happens, that they can have their helicopters, their planes, their yachts, their holidays in the south of France or wherever they go to their private islands. And they speak amongst themselves, and they know that the heads of the central banking systems, the financial systems in the world, they have control over them. And they know that they're being controlled as well, and they control the lower classes below them and below them and below them until you get to the ordinary person in the street. Well, how do we change this? Well, this has been going on for eons, for probably hundreds of years, and it's just now we're seeing people being individuals being defrocked of their privileges. Prince Andrew being one recently. We need to see the end of these royal families and these kings that have ruled us and the elites that are ruling over us. The population of the earth, some say that's too many, 8-point-something billion people. I think the population of the earth is too small. I think we need to have more people enjoying the benefits of the resources that we have, not just in this country, but globally.
Well, I think, Ian, every time I'm up in a plane, or even if I'm driving up the coast of Australia, when you see, hours and hours of land, it's, the whole concept that there's too many of us, only because we're all being squeezed together in little pockets all over the place. It appears like there's a hell of a lot, right? But there's tons more to be explored and tons more available, and it just gets people thinking small and thinking differently, doesn't it?
Correct, Helen. I mean, no matter where you live in the world, there's always a coastline, and Australia's got a huge coastline. We could have regional centres all dotted all around the countryside, beautiful centres, accessible by either fast trains between the centres or by aircraft from one side of the country to the other. And there's plenty of water around the country. There's plenty of sunshine. There are ways and means of creating energy, which one day I'll talk to you about once some new systems are proven to be effective.
Yes, I've got my eye on that too. I've got a few people that are talking about the same thing. I
That's right.
want that. That's what this show is about, is to get those new ideas out there.
Well, we can talk about that another time because
Another
I
time.
really
So
would
tell
like to have
me,
some.
what would you say to somebody, right? So you've got this plethora of experience and knowledge. You've made change throughout your lifetime, because you haven't walked the main path that the majority are walking, and it's not an easy road when you've got to do that. So I take my hat off to you. What do we say? Because what do we say to people about vaccines now? We have to say to people they have to make a choice. The way to change this is to make a choice. So what would you tell people about vaccines now and what they should think about?
Comes back to mandates and choice. We should have the choice, and the choice should be based on full, free, voluntary, informed consent, full, free, voluntary, informed refusal, and full, free, informed consent of an option or alternative. We have that in our constitution. That has been breached, seriously breached by our government officials, by our politicians here in this country. We should be mandating that the politicians be mandated to tell the truth.
Because in Florida, they've put in legislation, haven't they, that it is not to be mandated at all.
Correct.
People
Correct.
again, and we need to start following those sorts of standards, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everybody should be informed about the side effects of the vaccines.
Yes.
And there are the list goes as long as your arm and even longer with some of the vaccines.
Yes.
And the vaccines, I wrote a Substack about the aluminium in vaccines. We don't have mercury in the vaccines.
Yes.
Mercury is toxic to the brain cells.
Well, do you remember after COVID came out and people were having the injections? I remember, like, from different parts of the world were coming out YouTubes where people thought it was really funny because they were taking the fridge magnets off their fridges and sticking it on the injection site on their arm, and it was sticking, it was magnetizing to their arm.
Yeah, that was probably because the red blood cells, which carry a lot of iron, accumulating in clumps,
Right.
and the magnet was attracting them. There
Wow.
may be other mechanisms as well, Helen, but
Yes.
it was crazy stuff. People, I mean, fancy going and having an injection of a genetic substance that's wrapped up in a lipid nanoparticle that is delivered to virtually every cell in your body, from your brain to your testicles to your ovaries to your liver, your spleen, your heart, everywhere.
And it was the first time they'd put lipids in a vaccination, wasn't it?
Yes,
Never been injected into a human being before.
and the lipid themselves is toxic. It's a foreign lipid, and it sinks itself into the cell membrane, and disrupts the cell membrane.
It's
And
like a carrier system. It carries it through the body.
it does, yeah. It carries it through the body, then it gets to the cell membrane, then discharges it once it gets to the cell membrane or inside the cell. And some of them don't even discharge at that level. They go to the nucleus of the cell and discharge the
Spike
payload
proteins,
into the nucleus of the
which
cell.
is spike proteins, right? So it's a carrier that just drops off this load of spike proteins here, there, and everywhere. Which, when I there was a movie, a documentary that you referred to recently that actually showed how the mRNA vaccines work. And that was, I really enjoyed that. I think everybody needs to watch something like that. Because when you see the spike protein, it started helping me understand why some people didn't get sick and other people really did. And it's
Well,
gone.
some people did get sick, some people died,
Yes.
and many people are developing cancers now. And the important thing for everybody who's been vaccinated, if they're fearful of anything, they change their lifestyle, have a good diet, take appropriate supplements to support their immune system, get plenty of good sleep, and most importantly, sunshine. Absolutely critical for boosting up your vitamin D levels and making sure your vitamin D levels are optimal. And then, you are actually doing everything to protect yourself against a whole range of diseases as well.
You just read my mind because my next question was going to be, well, what do people do, right? Some people don't feel that they can say no to a mandate or no to the pressure of having a vaccine. How can they take care of themselves? You just actually told us, though.
I told you I could go into a couple of details, Helen,
Sure.
because it is important people understand some of the most important things to do. As I said, getting sunshine and making sure your vitamin D levels are above 125 to 130 nanomoles per liter. You just have to remember that it may be a lower figure for other countries where they measure it in nanograms per liter.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that you're going to drink some vitamin C? You're going to take some tablets? You're going to take it intravenously? How does your average Joe up their doses of vitamin C?
Vitamins, that was vitamin D. Vitamin
Oh,
C,
beg your pardon. Mm.
vitamin C is a completely different kettle of fish. It is very important to take, say, 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C per day if you suffer from any illness or problems at all, because that maintains a reasonable level of vitamin C in your system. And I take between 2,000 and 4,000 a day and don't get sick. But if you do get very sick, you may need 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, 50,000, 60,000, even up to 100,000, given by intravenous injection of sodium ascorbate. And that's the form of vitamin C that we give intravenously.
So, if people want, because this is a lot of information for people to take on board, once again, your Substack, if somebody gets access to your Substack and they can search vitamin D, vitamin C, can they go and have a look that way?
They can go and look for, they can search vitamin C in cancer, vitamin C in chemotherapy, vitamin C in radiotherapy, vitamin C in surgery, vitamin C in anesthetics, vitamin C in the common cold, flu, whatever. It's all there, all the stuff about vitamin D as well. But coming back to COVID and the vaccines, the virus and the vaccines both destroyed or altered the microbiome in your gut. The gut is a very, very important organ for not only digestion and assimilation of nutrients and the production of bile and pancreatic juices and so forth, but the gut is a very important part of the nervous system and the immune system. And if the bacteria and other organisms inside your gut that form your feces are not the good guys, not the good bacteria, but changed, and you have bad bacteria in there, you may have gut symptoms from time to time, but you don't really realize that the microbiome in your gut may be suppressing your immune system. And one of the bacteria that was really wiped out by both the vaccine and the virus was a bacteria called Bifidobacterium bifidum. You just have to re remember bifido, if you like, have biff, a fight. But the bifido, it actually corrects the microbiome and helps all the other good guys come back. So you may need to take, a high potency, frequent intake of a high potency probiotic
Probiotic.
with bifidobacteria in it. And helping that, of course, are things like kimchi and sauerkraut and live sauerkraut, not dead preserved sauerkraut, and good quality yogurts, not the sugary yogurts you buy in the supermarket, but the bland live yogurt. They help to keep you healthy and live longer. I mean, if you have a bad microbiome, you can say, well, you're going to be sick sooner or later. You're going to get an autoimmune disease or something. wrong with yourself.
And it's going to take time too, isn't it? To, you know, I mean, firstly, I see it like it's a bit like putting diesel in a petrol car. We've just had diesel put into the body, which is going to, it's just going to wreck the motor, right? That's kind of what it does.
Yep.
And if people follow what you're saying, like getting, you know, getting the vitamin D and the C, and starting to introduce things for the gut, it's going to take time. And that's one of the things that people, we really need to press that, don't we? Because people get impatient.
They do. They do get impatient, and it takes a long time to develop diabetes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you consume 120 pounds of sugar per head per annum for 20 years, you're going to get diabetes or pre-diabetes.
Right.
And that's what we see with all of the soft drink that's being drunk and the cakes and biscuits and so forth full of sugar, the sugary diet. Even healthy foods like some of the fibrous cereals have 50% sugar added to them. So you've got to look at what's in your food. Eat things that you can recognize. Not things that you can't recognize.
And yes, we're talking about processed, aren't we?
We're talking about processed foods.
Yep.
Fresh is best. Fresh organic, if you can. And, you know, 7 to 9 different servings of fruit and vegetables per day. Don't overdo the fruits, but plenty of berries and plenty of vegetables. You know, 3 to 5 fish meals a week, if you can. A couple of red meat meals a week, making sure that the red meat is not too fatty. Plenty of olive oil in your diet, plenty of chocolate in your diet, you know, not sugary chocolate, but, you know.
Hey, that just got everybody listening to us a little bit, didn't it?
Well, it's one of the things that keeps you living longer. vitamin C does, and plenty of oxygen, you know. And there's so many little tricks to stay healthy and fit. You don't, you really, I think one of my Substacks has got one of the speeches that I did on longevity, living for a long period of time and living healthy. And basically it comes back to other things that are most important, and that is the love of your family and your social connectivity. That's extremely important in living long and healthy.
Yeah.
Providing your family are not a bunch of drug addicts and alcoholics. but it might probably helps as well.
But contact, which again was something that they tried to do in those couple of years, the first couple of years of COVID, was eliminate that. That just really, I think for a lot of people, really made it very, very, made them very aware that contact is essential. It's essential.
And shutting schools down, I mean, the Great Barrington Declaration was a declaration by, you know, tens of thousands of people, mostly many professionals, academics and doctors. And
what was that declaration?
The Great Barrington Declaration.
Right.
It was organised by 3 well-known epidemiologists from...
During the COVID period you're talking about?
Yes, during COVID, right at the beginning, almost the beginning of COVID.
Okay.
Great Barrington Declaration. Jay Bhattacharya was one of the epidemiologists, and Jay is now a senior within the Trump government, working with RFK Jr.
Okay.
In terms of making America healthy again.
Yep.
So I think was either from Harvard or Stanford. There was another epidemiologist from Oxford. But the governments around the world took no notice of these specialists. They listened to the conflicted bureaucrats working for the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in the United States and the Centers for Disease Control. These bureaucrats are not accountable for the decisions they make.
Yep.
They haven't been held accountable. They should be held accountable. And I can name a number of them, but it's important to realize that one of them, who pushed the vaccines at the beginning, has now come back saying that it was the wrong thing to do.
Mm.
Dr. Redfern
had a bit of that going on since. A lot of people have, you know, turned their ideas and their comments 180 degrees, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
Again, it also, like, people watching that, you know, watching people that they saw in authority, people that they thought that were more important than them. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, lower class, middle class, you know, and the elite. When people look up to them and you know, see them making these declarations and see them getting stripped apart by other factions of the world, really makes people think that what can I do? What can I do myself as an individual? And, you know, you've probably recognized this many times in your life, and I don't know what to call it, whether we create a new dimension, a new timeline, and a shift in reality. I don't know what it is. But if you start making some correct, very good choices for yourself, you start to shift your world. I know, and I'll say this from personal experience. You talked about drug addicts before. Well, I'll just stick my hand up. I was one. I was
Brilliant.
one, right? And I wrote a story. I wrote a book, and that was part of, I shared part of that about my life. But when I was a drug addict, I was surrounded by drug addicts. And when I made a choice to stop, it's like shifting into another reality. It's like the drug addicts started to disappear, and other people started either coming back into my life or new people did. And I want individuals out there to know that no matter how many people they saw, including you, who got attacked, who got, you know, stripped of all sorts of different rights or issues or things, that when you individually decide something or choose something for yourself, you start to shift a reality. Did I just make sense then?
Yes, you do. You did, absolutely. And you go into a psychiatric hospital, and all the depressed patients are talking to one another. So they're ruminating over their depressions. Schizophrenics are another group. So, I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you know, we do tend to. If you change your ways, you often can see other things more clearly. And
Yes.
you know,
Thank you.
I was
Thank
very
you.
lucky when I started my career because I started in agricultural science in 1963, graduated in 65, and that was followed by a number of years of research into animal nutrition. When I did medicine, there was no animal nutrition, there was no human nutrition. It's just treat the cancer in the bed. That's how they referred to patients. And that's why when I really said, no, I'm not going to be like you, professor, I'm going to do something different. And that's we started the College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine. It's the oldest organization in the world, training and retraining doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals. So it's
And that's when you started walking down a new path. It was a new reality.
it was a new reality. And when I opened my mouth and wrote a book, they tried to strike me off. So, and that was in the early 1980s with the advent of the HIV virus. I mean, that was another farce. I'm starting to believe, well, I have believed that it was a virus that was created in some form or another, because it just popped out of nowhere. Immune deficiency virus, you know.
I remember I had young children at the time. And again, I still had some common sense about me that a lot of people around me didn't have. And when we got together for, you know, the children's groups, playtime and things like that, all of a sudden mothers were turning up with rubber gloves and, you know, all sorts of other antiseptics and things like this, just for if a kid got a cut, because the whole dialogue about HIV and AIDS had everybody thinking that a cut could transmit, and people weren't researching and understanding enough about what the whole thing was. It scared the world.
I know. I think I put a Substack up in the early days of COVID with the Grim Reaper. Remember the Grim Reaper bowling
Yes,
ball, and
yes.
the targets weren't the usual. What do they call them? Oh, at the end of the bowling rink, the tin
Oh, the pins.
pins. Yeah, but the pins were young children.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And it was very scary, and that's how they also got control of us. And
Wow. And that's just another cycle of COVID. It's the same sort of strategy.
it was very much the same because people were my profession was so fearful of it, they would not treat HIV AIDS patients. You know, they were they would just avoid them. And my clinic was open to it. We'd been treating a lot of infectious disease patients with high-dose intravenous vitamin C. The HIV/AIDS patients used to come along, and we actually showed that we could keep them alive and kill off some of their secondary infections quite quickly with the high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And using diet and high-dose intravenous vitamin C, we actually cured some of their cancers.
You've been doing this for decades.
That was in the 90s.
Decades. And they didn't want to listen to you, you know, 5 years ago. Silly people.
No, silly. Well, that's life in a big city, Helen. I mean, I wrote a book about it called The AIDS Fighters.
Right.
Linus Pauling, the double Nobel Prize laureate, wrote a foreword to it. And some
yes. Yes.
And that book nearly got me struck off.
Wow.
So I ended up before the medical board.
Yep.
They found that they couldn't strike me off because I hadn't done any harm to anybody, and my patients were all there with the TV stations saying, you know, they were doing very well. Thank you very much.
So my appeal. They were going to give it a red hot go to try and get rid of you or trying to quiet you.
Yeah. Well, I've got an army of angels now. They've built up. So I think, you know.
Me too. Ones that you can see and ones that you can't see. Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah. I think it's time for the world, the people of the world to wake up.
Yes.
We don't need to have illness and disease. The only disease that we should have is the trauma, accidents. Mm. And a lot of accidents can be prevented with a better lifestyle. And genetic determined diseases. Apart from that, we shouldn't have infectious disease. We shouldn't have degenerative disease. We should do like my grandfather and grandmother did. They went to bed one night and died peacefully, not on any medication, but in their 90s.
It shouldn't be a slow decline, and it shouldn't be turning them all into zombies in those chairs in a retirement home or something. No.
So, and also, I mean, the authorities that we've set up and the institutions that we've set up have failed us.
Yes.
I think we need a different philosophy on humanity. And I think the United Nations needs to be reformulated, not reformed because it's useless, but reformulated so that we don't have wars. Wars can be prevented.
Mm.
The amount that we spend on armaments is unbelievable when we've got I've got people who can't even afford a decent meal, and they're dying. I mean, I've written about it so many times. I've written about it recently. Our government here in Australia is a dismal failure.
Yes.
It hides everything. There's no transparency. They tell lies, and they waste tens of billions of dollars. I mean, during COVID, Helen, trillions of dollars, not billions, but trillions of dollars were spent or wasted on COVID.
Yes.
And where did that... Where did all that wealth go to? What was wealth that was...
It went upstream. Upstream.
Upstream, yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm going down to the river after this. I'm going down the river after this. I'm going upstream to see what I can find.
Well, all we know is here in Victoria, in Australia, is that now we've got, like, tons of taxes and stuff as they're trying to pull back and claw back as much as they can out of the people to pay what they spent. I feel like I'm just living in a world, I'm in a circus and I'm surrounded by clowns.
Yeah, I feel like that too. I'm surrounded by very good people who are blind to what's going on, who are suffering from some sort of cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
And willful, you know, willful blindness in some respects. But we have politicians who are running a totalitarian state here in Victoria. We're a great example of a totalitarian state in a Western democracy. And we have decisions being made by premiers in this country that are caused or affected by communist countries. We do have communists running the government in this country. I'm not saying that. And we have to get rid of them. We have to do something about it.
My research and investigation has told me exactly what you're saying. And I just think that, you know, if people have got question marks about what you've just said, get out there and investigate it yourself. You'll find what's really been going on.
I mean, Daniel Andrews, our previous premier,
yes.
He grew up in a family that was aligned with communists. Anthony Albanese, when he our prime minister, when he was a student, he was outwardly admitting communist, and yep. he's running the country now.
Yes.
And look, we go and borrow money from China, billions of dollars from China, to finish the hole in the ground that's going to be a railway. When we could have gone to our friends in the US and borrowed the money from them. You know, I would prefer...
That's what I'm saying. The investigation shows you the writing on the wall.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Victoria is... It could be regarded as a... I'd say a state of another nation. Let me
yes.
put it that way. Because
yes.
our previous premier... wanted the One Belt, One Road system to come
correct.
Straight from China.
He's made it quite clear his affiliations with China.
Yes.
It's very clear, yes. So, again, though, let's come back to the people, the you know, the ordinary men and women, right? Because when we start thinking globally, everyone gets lost. They get lost. And part of my strategy was, even leading up to COVID, I knew something was coming. I just didn't know what it was going to be. I had started living locally, you know, focus on local, start just having a good moral compass, be the best version of yourself that you can be. Like you've shared with everybody, look at your health and your well-being, get out there in the sun, even get your shoes off and, you know, walk in the grass and start eating cleaner. But if you keep your focus local and you start unplugging from supporting a lot of other things, that's how you make a difference. What do you think?
Absolutely. Do it all locally, local government. If you're going to start anything, don't try and start with the United Nations. Start with your own village, within your own village, with your own people, and support them. And in terms of business, and support those who are suffering from illness, and help them and say, look, the medical profession doesn't have a cure for your problem. Look at what nature might be able to help you with, and you know. And if you've got a religion, if you believe in God, and you've got a religion, then you know you go back to your religion. And but I have a something overarching all of that, and that's basically a philosophy of life for everybody on the planet.
So yeah.
We have freedom from disease and peace.
Yeah.
Because without peace, we don't have health.
Yes.
Without health, there's nothing else. I mean, you have no other dreams than getting healthy if you're sick, and that's something that RFK Jr. keeps on repeating. Those who've got in good health, they've got many, many dreams. Those who've got an illness, there's only one dream for them, and that's to get better. And the only really way of getting better is to follow a natural lifestyle.
Yes.
And we can describe what that is quite simply. And I think people need to realise you've got to look for the evil in the world and the bad, and make sure that you set your own examples have a set of values that you believe in, and yes. Try to help others.
That's how we change. That's how each and every person out there can change. That's exactly right. How I see it too. And, you know, when you've had to make change and you've had to make some significant change in your life at many times, how do you go about it? If you had to, you know, champion someone who was about to, you know, just making some change in their lives, how would you support them? Or what advice could you give them to encourage them to make those changes?
Basically, write down a list of affirmations, say 10 affirmations about how you'd like to be, and they've got to be all positive.
Yep.
I won't smoke anymore, I won't do this, I won't do that. They've got to be positive affirmations, like every day in every way I'm getting better and better and better.
Yes.
You make up your own affirmations. And also the breaking of habits. You have to break bad habits. And you can't do it overnight. We had somebody speaking at one of our WOW meetings, and I really appreciate what she said. If you don't exercise, then it's not good for you. And if you don't like exercise, then why don't you try, just when you get out of bed in the morning, touch your toes just once and say, well, I did some exercise.
There's a good mantra that goes with that.
What's that?
Nothing changes. Nothing changes.
Nothing. Exactly. So little bits at a time, you know, and towards a healthier, better lifestyle. I mean, you really, if you're going to stop drinking milk or eating sugary things, don't try and cut it out all at once. Look at ways whereby you can substitute the milk, or you can actually reduce the cravings for sugar. Have a look in Google or WhatsApp or wherever you find good information, and say, okay, I can take some extra zinc because my immune system's not being too good, and zinc helps my pancreas, and zinc reduces my cravings for sugar. Maybe not completely. So what else? Well, there's chromium as well. So these are supplements you can take, or you can look for foods that are rich in these things.
Yeah, start small. Start small, right?
Yeah. I mean, to everybody, I say if you really want good health and prevent a lot of diseases, you take some vitamin C and vitamin D.
Yep. There you go.
Okay. Increase your intake of fruit and vegetables by 3 vegetables per day, two fruits or some berries.
Yep.
A handful of nuts will increase your longevity by 30 years.
Mm.
Right? So a handful of nuts. The good nuts are Brazil, walnuts, pecans. Peanuts are no good. Bad, bad, bad. And also another P is cashew. So cashews are not the best of nuts either.
But, sure. I've heard the same myself, but yes.
Walnuts for your brain, because they look like brains anyway.
Yes, they do. They do. Absolutely.
That was said tongue in cheek, of course.
But they do. Yes. We don't want to make it overwhelming for everybody, right? Because that's, you know, that's, I mean, I've got a few people I know that are in the health and nutrition field. And when I see them, I mean, they're a bit like I used to do. I was always passionate about researching and investigating life. And if anybody started on the topic of, you know, anything, all my passion would come out and I'd watch their eyes glaze over and think, oh, I've just lost them. I've just lost them, right?
So we
all have a bit of an off switch, don't we? So start small, one step at a time. Yeah.
I say for most adults, 1,000 to 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C per day and 4,000 units of vitamin D.
And unplug from the global, guys. Unplug from the global, right? Don't listen too much, because that's what's causing anxiety and worry for everybody as well, isn't it?
It is. And we really do need to change our healthcare system. If you like, I did put up a Substack on a new health, wellness, and wellbeing and medical system for it's going to be for Australia. And somebody said, "What about the national, the world of wellness and the World Council for Health and the World Health Organization?" I said, "Well, this could be for the globe as well." So,
Now on that topic, tell us just quickly about World of Wellness. You started that, did you?
Yeah, started the World of Wellness. It's a small organisation, but it's part of the bigger organisation here, the Aligned Council of Australia, or the Aligned Council of Australia, the ACA.
Mm-hmm.
That's got 40-odd member groups representing 1.85 million people. Still too small, as far as I'm concerned, for having an influence in Australia, but growing. But the World of Wellness is really a substitute for the World Council, the World Health Organization.
Okay.
So it's a start, and it will need more funding, and it will need more support in the long run. But it's got a very firm basis in terms of wellness, and the material that we've put up there is accessible to anybody around the world if they want to.
So this is a new model of health that you're looking at, is it?
Yes, yeah, it is a new model of health, definitely. It doesn't do away with primary care, which is most important, and primary care general practice in this country has been decimated by every government for the last 40 years.
Yeah,
we don't have a powerful union for the patients and the doctors. The AMA is weak, extremely weak. We've got a new organisation called the Australian Medical Professional Society. It's growing, and it's got a very, very good philosophy. But primary care is very, very important.
Yep.
education of the individual from the day they're born, virtually, with their mothers,
Yes.
on how to live a healthy life and a good life.
And to know their body, to know their body, and to trust the aches and pains and the language that the body speaks as well.
Well, if you're doing it all the right way, Helen, you never get aches and pains.
That's right. I read that years ago. It's like, what does a healthy body feel like? And it's like nothing.
Well, so many people are walking around with irritable bowel syndrome, and they accept it as normal.
Yes,
it's unbelievable.
It is.
And hay fever. I mean, just hay fever every year, and we've got a normal thing. It's not. It's basically the body wanting to detoxify itself.
Correct.
But you know, coming back to the new system.
Yep.
Basically, we've got primary care, we've got hubs of wellness, which are for those who are unwell,
mm-hmm.
and we've got hospitals, and we've got centres in the hospitals for wellness and promotion of health. So the patient in the hospital, instead of being patched up with whatever medication or surgery and sent out to live their normal lifestyle, they're given advice on how to reduce the risk of the illness becoming complicated or progressing.
Yep.
Then once that's happened, they come back out into the community, and rather than going to their primary care doctor who looks after sickness and tries to manage sickness at a primary level, they go back to a wellness hub. And the wellness hub is to keep them well.
Mm-hmm.
So that if there is a risk of them relapsing into any sort of disease condition, then the risk of that is minimized by diet, lifestyle, sunshine, exercise, whatever.
Yes.
And exercise, powerful exercise, things like Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga. I find Qigong extremely good. And you don't have
movement, movement. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, if you clean the house and do it at leisure and listening to your favorite music, it can be a form of yoga. Okay, you know, the new smoking cigarettes and the death from cigarette smoking is no longer the smoking, it's the sedentary lifestyle, sitting on your butt for too long, and that's well documented now.
Move it or lose it. Yep.
Is it? That's right.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So there's nearly 2 million people that are all focused on a new world of wellness. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And the politicians are aware of it. I've sent the new protocol for the planning strategy for a new health and wellness and medical system to politicians. So it's 51 pages at the moment. That's just the start.
Good, thank you. We all want to thank you for championing our health and starting something new. You've been walking a new path though all your life, Ian.
No, I haven't, Helen. I was a naughty boy when I was on board a ship as a ship's doctor. I can tell you, I ate all the wrong things.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? It's like you've always challenged the narrative and, you know, looked for solutions and walked either a path side by side or heading off in another direction totally, yeah?
Yes, and it's not been easy because of the challenges, but it's been rewarding.
It's been worth every bit, every step. So how do people get in touch with World of Wellness?
Just go online. It's www.wowintl.org or .com.
So it's, www.wow, which is World of Wellness, INTL, which is stands for international, and it's either .org or .com. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, people, get out there and become a part of it because it doesn't cost. How much is it to be a member? $30-something.
$35 Australian
for a year to get connected with all this wonderful change and wonderful information. How do people get onto your Substack? Because, you know, I said to you before we started this show, I've been getting your Substack for a while now and it keeps rewiring my brain with every article. I love it. It's juicy information, full of references and, you know, whatnot as well for those people out there who are researchers. How do they get onto your Substack, Ian?
Just looking it up now because it's substack.com
Yep.
at Ian Brighthope, just one word.
Okay. Get out there, people, and get yourself plugged in because truly it is life-changing information, and people have to educate themselves. We're really in a time where we need to rethink everything we think, right?
Absolutely. And coming back to the Substack, Helen, it's subscribe for free.
Yes.
Okay, you don't have to pay anything at all for it. Everything is free. Substack themselves put up a little sign, if you like this, then subscribe and pay a fee.
They do.
But that's only because the people at Substack need to make some money out of whatever they're doing. But my stuff, mine is all free, at least for the time being. And
Yes.
I don't restrict in any access to it at all.
Look, I'm not telling everyone out there not to trust their doctor and not to trust their hospital. I'm asking them to just really start being their own advocate. I watched my mum before she passed away for a few years there. She was on 12 medications, and I started showing her how to investigate the side effects. And bit by bit, little by little, over a 12-month period, she went from 12 medications down to two by her own choice, by just asking me again and again, what was the side effect of this one again? Why am I taking this one again? So, and then she became an advocate for all her neighbors and stuff, checking in on what they were taking.
It's so important to get that information, Helen, and education. Yeah, only to get by communicating and communicating in the best possible way
That's right.
without lecturing at people, you know.
Correct. And that's why I had you on today, because you are full of knowledge and wisdom, and we've got to just drip feed it to people and get a little bit out at a time. So I'm sure everybody enjoyed what we were talking about today. I hope we've inspired them all, Ian, to start either walking a bit of a different path or thinking a little bit differently. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Helen. You inspire me too, you know. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Good. Excellent. Well, we're going to do it again up the way a little bit, but in the meantime, thank you very much to everybody out there who's listening. Thank you for listening today, and we'll be back next Monday, Australia time at 3 p.m. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thanks, Helen. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Inspired Radio with Helen Taylor live on PBS Radio TV. Join us every Monday at 4 p.m. Melbourne, Australia, AEDT time, for more stories and conversations that will change your world.